since our first debate 7 months ago in Cleveland. A lot has transpired, obviously, including an RNC pledge that all of you signed, agreeing to support the party's nominee and not to launch an independent run. Tonight, can you definitively say you will support the Republican nominee, even if that nominee is Donald J. Trump?
I'll support the Republican nominee.
Senator Cruz, yes or no, you will support Donald Trump if he's the nominee?
Yes, because I gave my word that I would.
Governor Kasich, yes or no, would you support Donald Trump as the Republican nominee?
Yeah, I kind of think that before it's all said and done, I'll be the nominee.
Oh my gosh. I'm sorry, but looking back on this past year and a half, there was never a better time to be doing what I do or doing what Brett Baer does every night on Special Report and, of course, moderating debates. And Brett Baer is with us now. His new book, I think this is going to blow away your other book, Brett. I mean, I loved your other books. Special Heart was about everything that happened with your son's surgery. Is amazing. But 3 days in January about Eisenhower, what we can learn from this very perilous time in American history where we had a man with a steady hand in directing the future of our country, a war hero. So 3 days in January, we'll continue to talk about that, but we got to get into just looking back on this last 18 months. Could you have any idea back then asking that question that all these people would violate their pledge?
Unbelievable. Well, I mean, look at John Kasich. I mean, yeah, but,
yeah.
And then I think it started in August, obviously in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
And then as we evolved, you suddenly got this sense that Trump was picking up steam every time. And no one still believed it. Even on the panel, I'd do the Canada Casino, and they'd mm-hmm. be – suddenly the bets would start going up and up and up. And they just couldn't believe it. You know, from the escalator down in 2015 to the nomination. I'll tell a quick story. Mm-hmm. About a year before he got into the race, I played golf with Donald Trump. And we were at his club, and he paired me with somebody else.
Are you better than he is?
I played in college.
Oh,
he's
so
a good
really...
golfer. He's really
good.
Does
he cheat? Someone told me he cheats.
I didn't see anything like that.
I don't play golf, but you know, isn't that part of the fun is to cheat? I'm just kidding.
I didn't see anything like that. But he paired me with somebody else, a good player. He paired another, but we played $5, you know, mm-hmm. And my partner and I, we were five up after five holes. And I turned to him and said, do you want to renegotiate this thing? And he said, no. They came back.
No, Brett.
They won.
No, Brett.
They won. On the last hole, he sunk a 45-foot putt to win. And in the cart ride back to the club, he said, this is a really, really quiet ride back to the clubhouse. Now, fast forward 2 years.
Uh-huh.
He wins the nomination. I do the last interview with Trump and Pence. And I'm saying to them in the interview, how are you going to do this? You're trailing in all these states.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that they're going to pull it out. After the interview is over, stand up, we're getting ready to leave. He said, Brett, I'm going to win Michigan, I promise. And I said, how do you know that? And he's like, remember that golf cart ride to the clubhouse?
He doesn't forget.
Now, that's 2 years plus back. And
he remembers his wins big time. He remembers those
moments.
So
he's about winning. It's about practical winning and figuring out how to do it. Now, I think there are a lot of people in both parties who look at the Arnold Schwarzenegger tweet today about ratings
that?
And say, what is that?
Ratings on Celebrity Apprentice?
So, there's issues, but he's about winning.
Well, when we you think back on the role of the media and how many people in the media really got it wrong. I mean, it is up until the last week. I mean, but throughout the entire campaign, so many people got it wrong. I mean, I think a lot of the people who got it wrong are people who don't, and Sean Hannity and I talk about this a lot. We do a daily focus group with the American people, and we don't just have conservatives listening to the show. We have a lot of angry people calling in, disagree with us. But you got a sense by talking to people coast to coast that they were unsettled by what had happened to the country under Obama, really unsettled. And they knew that going down the same road with Hillary, even with all the question marks about Trump, they didn't like Trump on everything, but they just couldn't go down that road with her. And I felt that. I mean, I felt that pretty consistently
well,
throughout the campaign.
I mean, I tell people to this day, the second debate, we we had a drink after the debate, and you said he's going to win. And at that point, actually, it was the furthest away he was from a sense that he was going to win. I think the Access Hollywood thing had just happened.
Not Billy Bush.
Yeah, and you said it's going to happen, and you were right. I think turning back to President Obama, as he now gets ready for his farewell address, which, by the way, comes out the same day that my book comes out, on Ike's farewell address on January 10th.
Oh, wow. It's the same day.
Same day.
Oh, we got you before the – okay. I thought your book was out now, but you can still buy it.
You can still buy it. Yes.
Oh, you're buying it on Amazon.com. You can get it on our site and Facebook, which we sell tons of books on our Facebook
page. And we have
page.
And my page is 3daysinjanuary.com.
Oh, okay.
And all of them are linked on there.
Oh, great. Perfect.
But anyway, the farewell address for President Obama, as he looks back at his time – we've seen this evolution about his look back and why Democrats lost, and it has not been about him. Eisenhower's farewell address was about the future of the country, and it was never about defending his administration or what he did. In fact, he tried to stay away from that. It was about humility. It was about the nation going forward.
Could you imagine Ike saying something like, well, we knew what hope was, and now we know what it feels like to have no hope? I mean, obviously, I'm quoting roughly from Michelle Obama from a few weeks ago, but that really kind of puts the nation's future in a personal context. If you're not succeeding, then the nation isn't succeeding. You can't imagine someone like him, with everything he gave to this country, ever making it about him.
Right.
I couldn't.
No, and he didn't in that farewell address. I mean, he really did craft it much like looking to Washington, the first farewell address, as he decided not to run again. By the way, Ike really researched that. He was a big fan of Washington, obviously a general who was recruited to run for president, who was a man of war fighting for peace.
Did he keep in touch with Truman, by the way? Did they, even though there was a lot of tension, obviously?
Eventually they got back together and talked and had a nice lunch about a year later.
Yeah, they campaigned brutally against Truman's excesses, corruption in Washington. Of course, the war machine.
It was icy, the transition between Truman to Eisenhower. I mean, so much so, the Eisenhowers stayed in the car and didn't go in for coffee at the White House the day of the inauguration.
Kept it running.
And the Trumans and the Eisenhowers were silent on the way to Capitol Hill for the inauguration. So it was very chilly.
Tell us, what was the parade like? I mean, tell us about with Eisenhower and Kennedy. Tell us what that was. It was a bitter cold, right?
Bitter cold, and it was a snowstorm that they had to mobilize the military to get the streets
Pennsylvania Avenue
cleared. And Eisenhower was all bundled up, and they had a nice exchange. Kennedy took off his coat. And,
of course, stud.
And looked like this new frontier, this new image that America really, really wanted. The story Eisenhower references, he was wearing long underwear. But nobody knows that.
Too cool, JFK.
But what was interesting is that, just weeks later, he would be calling on Ike for advice. And he would be calling on him again and again. To see
will Trump be calling on
President Obama? I don't know. I mean, he's definitely had a number of conversations with him. You have to give President Obama this. He served the country for 8 years.
Yep.
And his library will be interesting to see how he depicts, a lot of things and how history looks at President Obama. And I'll be interested to see how this farewell address is structured on Tuesday night.
He's going to have to, I think, contrary to what Michelle said, He'll try to make it a hopeful look to the future. You can't come out on your farewell address and indicate that things are all going to be turned back. But he'll issue a warning. I predict he will issue in his farewell address something of a warning we've made progress, worst recession since the Great Depression, all these gains. It would be a shame to turn back on it, but he'll soften it. It won't be as acrimonious, I think, as some people think.
Yeah, I agree. And I think what you've seen from the president-elect so far is a respect of President Obama and an interaction that some people are surprised at. We end the book on President-elect Trump meeting with President Obama.
Can you explain how you're able to do that? I mean, as someone who's written five books, How are you able to get a book out in January, and you had to write two endings of the book because you didn't know if Trump was going to win, and you had the Hillary ending, then you had the... I don't understand how you physically could have gotten this book out just in the time that you had.
So the deadline was 3 months before Election Day. And,
right.
And so I did. I wrote two endings. And I wrote an ending that Hillary Clinton wins and what to learn from Ike and that. And then I wrote an ending
that... You have to pay more to read that one now.
That Donald Trump wins.
Double.
And then right after the election, I asked the publisher, William Morrow, who's been great to work with under HarperCollins, if I could just... top it off and kind of refresh, obviously, what I wrote 3 months ago. I looked back at what I wrote about Trump winning 3 months before election, and that did not seem possible at that moment. And it was actually right on.
Pretty accurate.
And I found some behind the scenes of their meeting, Obama and Trump, and added that narrative to that. So it really all worked out.
Talk to us a little bit about Nixon and Eisenhower. And what kind of vice president he was, and obviously setting him up to run again unsuccessfully, and then leading into his third bite at the apple and running for president.
Yeah. Eisenhower respected Nixon, and he really admired his foreign policy chops, especially. There's a lot of talk about animosity between the two. I think it's overblown a bit if you look at Eisenhower's reflections on it. He regrets not having a better answer when people said what's the best thing about Dick Nixon. But he did make a mistake, Eisenhower says, in that he brought Nixon in before he was going to run and said, do you want to run from a cabinet position, better position than a vice president? And Nixon always thought that was him trying to dump him from the ticket and was very suspicious. So he kept him off the campaign trail. And Ike was very popular then.
What was his popularity leaving office? He's one of the most popular presidents to ever leave office.
It was above 60.
Yeah, it was 70. I think it was.
I think it was like 69, 71, something like that.
And think about what he did. He kept a strong military, but he ended, of course, the war in Korea, an armistice. But he had a very pragmatic approach to governance, and he stressed the need for peaceful relations, but a clear-eyed view of China and Russia.
And the interstate highway system.
And doing big things for the country
the first,
at the same time.
Civil rights legislation since Reconstruction.
Right.
An economy that was booming. And not a single U.S. soldier died under Eisenhower's 8 years in office that we know of.
Right.
That was at least unclassified. And that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I mean, when you think of all these people who are saying, we got to go into Syria. There are big prices to be paid, not just in terms of human sacrifice, what our armed forces go through every time we deploy, but domestically, the cost to the president and the presidency, future electability. I think when you look back of Barack Obama not going into Syria, remember where the polls were at the time. Only 34% of Americans wanted the U.S. to go militarily big into Syria. He looked at that. Obama wanted to be popular when it came to those things.
There will be things that I think the not going into Syria, there will be a lot of critics who said that he should have done something more and the red line was his biggest mistake diplomatically. But on the other side, you would have been engaged in a big
oh my God.
Battle.
It would be the new would have been the new Iraq. Okay, when we come back, fun moments from Brett's past. This is like a This Is Your Life show with Brett Baer. Don't go away. Stay with us.
Though scarred by many past frustrations, cannot be abandoned for the certainty agony of disarmament of the battlefield. Disarmament with mutual honor and confidence is a continuing imperative. Together we must learn how to compose differences, not with arms, but with intellect and decent purpose.
The Laura Ingraham Show.